The current sponsor of Fraudology is Sardine. If you aren't familiar with them yet, Sardine protects every customer interaction from financial crime. Banks, retailers, and fintechs use Sardine to detect fraud patterns, prevent money laundering, and stop sophisticated scams. You'll get to learn more about them throughout this quarter on Fraudology. But if you'd like to learn more about Sardine now, you can click on the link in the show notes of this episode to read more about them and to request a personalized demonstration of Sardine's suite of products. Welcome to Fraudology Podcast, where we dive into the science and study of online fraud from the perspective of an e-commerce fraud fighter. I'm Carice Hendrick. Well, if you tuned into the Fraudology this Tuesday, you know the big news. There's now a second Fraudology podcast called Banking on Fraudology, and that is hosted by Haley Windham. I am so excited about this. I have wanted to expand Fraudology for a while. Knowing that there are a lot of people that listen to this podcast that are on the banking side, and I appreciate it. And I hope you keep listening to this podcast too, as it'll continue to give you good information and, you know, get to know awesome people in fraud and still have my perspective from the e-commerce side. But I just felt like what was missing in the world of a bazillion podcasts was someone from the banking side of fraud and someone who can, you know, really have a Fraudology podcast, but talk about it from her perspective. And so I see this as just another podcast for you guys to subscribe to and listen to. Haley has, I think, like, she's mapped out 30 different guests that she's going to have on the podcast in the next several months. And they are all stars and really interesting people. There's a few of them that I don't know, but I'm excited to listen to. And I'm excited to listen to the ones that I do know too. Like, I know that she has Frank McKenna coming up, I think maybe next week. And they had a really good conversation, and it'll be really different than the conversation that Frank and I had or have when he comes on, because Haley has a different perspective and has all new questions she wants to ask him. So, and actually, speaking of the Banking on Fraudology podcast, her first guest, other than, you know, the first episode being her being my guest, her first official guest and the episode that came out yesterday is me. That was not a requirement, by the way, for her to have a podcast under the Fraudology umbrella. It was not a requirement to have me come on as her first guest. That was all her. But it was interesting because while I feel like I talk about chargebacks a lot because it's something I do quite a bit in my consultancy, you know, working with online merchants to reduce chargebacks and, you know, working with solution providers to understand them and just all, you know, chargebacks A to Z, basically. Haley had a lot of questions from her banking perspective about chargebacks. She wanted to understand really the nuts and bolts of how acquiring banks and merchants handle chargebacks and what they do. Because from her banking perspective, she had a lot of questions. When she was on the issuer side, there were things that she didn't understand why merchants did things certain ways, or, you know, what they were thinking or what they were even doing on that side. And so I asked her if she could maybe fill in a few blanks for me on the issuing side, because I had similar questions. I still do. I will always have questions about why some issuers do things the way they do, you know, from selecting the chargeback reason code to, you know, so many different things. And I didn't realize how much of a part Reg E plays in chargebacks, because I've always been on the responsive side and the reactive side. I didn't know that there was, you know, a timeline for Reg E, and that Reg E is really, you know, fulfilled by chargebacks in a way, even though the banks aren't the ones that are fulfilling the finances, or they're not the ones reimbursing the cardholders. So anyway, it was a really fun conversation, and I think you'll really enjoy it. And for now, you can only hear it on Banking on Fraudology. I might replay it on this channel in the coming weeks, but I highly recommend that you go and listen to that. On today's episode, I wanted to share a couple of fraud news stories that sparked my attention and really talk about why I think they matter so much, or why I think they're important. So the first one is about a bank, and I believe it's a regional bank out of Maryland, but still, it's, you know, a fairly good-sized bank that was vulnerable to credit application fraud for over a week, and they had to disclose this in their quarterly earnings call. So it was a pretty big gap and pretty big exposure. and vulnerability in their application fraud or application system for credit cards. That means that there were a lot of credit cards out there that were fraudulently approved. Well, fraudulent credit cards that were approved by a bank. And I know it took them at least a week to identify them and shut them down and all of that. So we'll talk about, you know, what this can mean for online merchants, as well as acquiring banks and others within the payment lifecycle. Also, this will just be kind of a quick one, but Wells Fargo and Chase both disclosed in their quarterly earnings call that they're responding to government inquiries about how they refund and respond to victims of fraud on Zelle. This is a current trend that I'm keeping an eye on, and I know a lot of you are too, when it comes to scam reimbursement, whether it's on Zelle, Cash App, Venmo, you know, any of the P2P money transfer apps, or it's through banks and wire transfers. So it's something that we've been keeping an eye on a little bit. And even though there's now a dedicated podcast to banking, you know, on fraudology, we'll still talk about it a little bit. And then kind of a follow-up to my conversation with Frank McKenna last week about how everyday consumers are being conned into becoming fraudsters. Frank wrote an article called Regular People Tap In to Help Check Fraudsters in LA. And I found it really interesting, so I thought that I'd read it and share it with you, as I think that there's some good lessons to learn from there. So the name of the bank that had this vulnerability was Shore United Bank. They're based out of Easton, Maryland. I don't have their BIN numbers, but that's hopefully something that you can get if you're on the e-commerce side of fraud, and you'll get why in a little bit. In their quarterly results for the first quarter, the very first highlight says credit card fraud. And then it goes on to say on April 2nd, 2024, the bank detected that it had been subjected to fraudulent credit card account openings during the first quarter of 2024 and commenced an investigation. Bad actors used stolen personal information to open bank-issued credit cards through the bank's online credit activation system. The personal information used had been stolen from individuals who are not customers of the bank. No existing bank customers were impacted by this fraudulent activity, and the bank's core processing system was not compromised. Upon detection, the bank immediately closed all fraudulently opened credit card accounts and suspended all credit card activations. The bank will not open new credit card accounts until its investigation is complete. The bank is implementing enhanced activity monitoring on all existing cards outstanding. So basically, they found that there were a lot of this. I'll finish reading this a little bit and then go into the explanation. So it says, as a result of the fraudulent activity, the company recognized a $4.3 million fraud-related expense in the first quarter of 2024 and does not anticipate additional losses related to this event. The majority of the fraud loss, approximately $3.6 million or 84% of this, occurred between March 25th and April 2nd, 2024. In coordination with the bank's credit card processor, management is evaluating the root causes of the fraud event and the preventative and monitoring controls that would have mitigated the fraud loss. Management will also consider in this evaluation whether the credit card product can attain the size and scale needed in the near term for the bank to continue as an issuer. The bank has notified and is actively working with law enforcement to recover a portion of the fraud losses by various means. So that's what actually worries me, right? Is the recovering a portion of the fraud losses by various means, because we know that credit card application fraud happens, you know, and not every bank will disclose it in their quarterly report. This was a large chunk of loss for a, you know, relatively regional bank. And so they had to disclose it in their quarterly reports. But this happens all the time where fraudulent information is used to open up credit cards. And a lot of times fraud chargebacks are filed, and those fraud chargebacks are then, you know, paid for by online merchants. It's, you know, actually really interesting, because that's what I talked to Haley about on her first episode of Banking on Fraudology. Well, the second episode, but her first episode being the interviewer is, you know, of course, I'm going to see it from the e-com merchant's perspective and know that there are a lot of times that chargebacks are filed when they shouldn't be. And there's this understanding that if there's credit card application fraud, you know, where someone opened a credit card in someone else's name through identity theft, that's not supposed to be charged back. That should be the bank's loss. It should be, you know, up to the bank to identify this. and know that they have to take the loss. But sometimes these get misclassified. Other times, some banks are not as honest about it, and they take advantage of the rules that essentially say that it's, you know, on the e-commerce merchant. Now, the e-commerce merchant can respond back that, you know, with information that they did everything they could to prevent fraud. But if the fraud was at the bank, there's nothing that can be done. The same thing happens a lot when there's account takeover on the issuing bank side. You know, when a bad actor takes over a bank account in, you know, a victim's name, and they use the credit card of the victim. And so maybe they'll call the bank and they'll change the email address and the phone number and the address on file. And so that way the victim doesn't know that their card was stolen, right? Because the text messages are going to a new phone number and the alerts are going to a new email address and the credit card statements are going to a new physical address. So this can carry on for a while. And either the bad actor will file chargebacks because they want to keep that account open longer, or they'll just, you know, stop paying the credit card bill, or the victim finds out about it. Oh my gosh, you know, there were unauthorized charges on my account. Well, if the bank doesn't do a proper investigation to determine that was because of account takeover on their side, those chargebacks slip through to e-commerce merchants too. So it's something that I think is worth, you know, being aware of for a lot of reasons. Now, granted, the problem is on the e-commerce merchant side, they don't have enough information to do the investigation. There are times when you can, you know, guess that it was account takeover on the banking side, but you're never going to have enough information to know that it was identity fraud on the bank side. And so you can only respond with what you have. But if the fraud happened somewhere else, you know, technically you shouldn't be responsible for it, but there's no way for you to know that. I remember there was one time during the financial crisis of 2010, when, you know, 2008, 2010, like around there, that I was investigating a chargeback that made no sense to me. It was, you know, they claimed fraud, but this card had been used for, you know, several months before at the merchant I was working for. And there was, you know, no reason to think it was fraud. And so I called the issuing bank to get more information. And that really can't happen anymore because most merchants don't have the full PAN. They don't have the full credit card number. But those days we did. So I was able to call and ask for more information. And someone at the issuing bank was not supposed to tell me this, but it was very enlightening, where they explained to me that the cardholder stopped paying their bills, and that one of the ways that this bank was trying to recuperate some of the funds that they had, you know, provisioned for credit for their customers was through filing fraud chargebacks. I was so upset. That was one of the first times I ever had insight into the fact that some banks are not always honest when dealing with the chargeback system. I've since had many, many more examples of that. But that was the first time where I went, oh, I see, you guys aren't playing fair, but there's no way for us to, you know that. Now, I did respond to that chargeback saying that that's exactly what the bank said, but I think I still lost that chargeback because especially with fraud, it's so subjective. And because the issuer is the first one that files a chargeback and they're the ones that have the last ability to make a decision on that, they can say, you know, so the issuer files the chargeback, the merchant can respond, but then the issuer can come back and say, no, we still don't accept that. Now, yes, technically a merchant can go to arbitration, but most don't. I think I've talked on the podcast before that there are some, you know, I found on the consulting side that there are some really good examples of when merchants should be issuing arbitration and that it's a really good winning strategy, but that's not something I'll go into today. If that's something that you want to know more about, though, please message me and let me know and I'll do an episode on it. I can't remember how long ago that episode was. And now that we're up to almost 300 episodes, I do not expect anyone to have listened to every single one. So if that's, you know, a topic that you are interested in, let me know and I'll do another episode on it. So that's why I shared that story, because this happens a lot. It's not very common that banks disclose it in their quarterly earnings reports, but this does happen from time to time where there's account opening fraud, maybe not to this extent. But the reason why I thought it would be helpful to those of you in e-commerce fraud to look up the BIN number for Shore United Bank is, just in case your company was part of that $4.3 million, you can just issue refunds on it now, just in case. Or, if you really want to get maybe not litigious, that's not the right word, but if you want to at least make a note on it for your chargeback department, if you do get any chargebacks for fraud on those bins, that happened towards the end of March, you may want to respond with this press release that says, this was probably a result of account opening fraud. I don't know if that's not technically considered compelling evidence, but it is something that you can, try to respond to. I can only imagine that the biggest merchants, and I know a lot of you listen, probably have several charges from this bank during that time. So it may not hurt to look that up. This other one I mentioned was just really short, but it's because we've been talking about Zelle disputes and scams and, how it's looking like the US is starting to follow suit behind the UK and EU, where there's going to be more enforcement around banks providing liability to scam victims. Right now they only provide liability shift when there's, they only provide refunds really for victims when there's a credit card involved and it's an online or mobile transaction, right? It's a card not present transaction because it's not their money. But because there are so many more scams targeting consumers directly using peer-to-peer money transfer services or banks like wire transfers and, services like that, there's a lot more attention towards it. So this article says U.S. authorities are examining Wells Fargo over disputes on the Zelle payment network, the lender said Thursday in its quarterly report to the Securities and Exchange Commission. Government authorities have been conducting formal or informal inquiries or investigations regarding the handling of customer disputes related to fund transfers made through the Zelle network, Wells Fargo said in the filing. They did not mention the names of the authorities involved or explain more about the nature of the ongoing probe. And then in a quarterly report filed with the SEC on Wednesday, JPMorgan Chase said it was responding to inquiries from civil government officials regarding the Zelle disputes, and it's cooperating with these inquiries while furnishing required information. Neither Wells Fargo nor JPMorgan Chase has been accused of any misconduct. But we know that, I think it came in the public eye due to a New York Times article in 2022 talking about there being fraud on Zelle, but anyone within fraud, especially on the banking side, has been aware of that since 2020, I think, as there just is more and more scams targeting consumers. And speaking of scams targeting consumers, Frank McKetta came on and we were talking about this new trend last week where consumers are becoming victims or really conned into becoming the fraudsters themselves. And Frank wrote this article that I was going to read on the podcast and then share a little bit of my thoughts. So he starts with, a fraud gang out of Los Angeles just wanted people's debit cards so they could deposit stolen checks and make off with the proceeds. People who participated in the scheme were regular people who just wanted to make a few bucks on the side. The scheme worked perfectly until the gang accidentally recruited an undercover agent and everything fell apart. A federal grand jury has indicted 11 people in a wide-ranging bank fraud and identity theft scheme that allegedly involves stealing checks, recruiting account holders on social media, and siphoning over $5 million from victims' accounts. The 60-count indictment was unsealed on Tuesday, that was last Tuesday, in U.S. District Court in Los Angeles, and it accuses the defendants of conspiring to commit bank fraud, aggravated identity theft, money laundering, and mail theft from October 2020 through August 2023. Prosecutors say the group stole checks from mailboxes and post office collection boxes, which we know is a really big problem in the US, and then deposited them into the accounts of people they had recruited on Instagram and other social media platforms to be money mules. Regular people are increasingly becoming an extension of these fraud ring empires, depositing fraudulent checks as a side hustle. So it became a web of alleged co-conspirators working together. The indictment portrays a perpetrator named Carlos Corona, 28, of Los Angeles, as the central figure who dispatched several co-defendants to steal checks, seek out account holders, and deposit and withdraw ill-gotten funds. He went by the name Charlie Hustle, or Charlie Hustle 323 on social media. An alleged co-conspirator, Ricardo Ochoa Jr., 30, of Los Angeles, posted an Instagram story depicting cash and receipts showing a $81,559 check had been deposited one day and withdrawn the next. $18 into $81K, he bragged, inviting others to join the scheme. Salo Solores, 21, of Los Angeles, allegedly stole mail from post offices in the Eagle Rock and Griffith Park neighborhoods, which I think are a little nicer neighborhoods in LA, and then passed checks to Mr. Corona and others for deposit. Prosecutors say the gang advertised openly on their Instagram accounts, offering people easy cash for minimal participation. All banks welcome picking up cards, tap in, wrote Luis Enrique Lopez, 23, of Huntington Park. These guys are so young. We know that more and more fraudsters are very young, but it just, that sticks out to me. I mean, the head guy was 30, but the rest are 21, 23. I mean, this is a lot more money than they could make at entry-level jobs. So Luis Enrique Lopez allegedly instructed a would-be recruit, I deposit a check into your account, and then when it clears, we split the money, you, me, and the check plug. The money mules would get a cut of the action, and they only needed to turn over their debit card to the check fraudsters. As part of the scheme, and here's something interesting that has to do with chargebacks too, people who handed over their debit cards and PIN numbers were instructed to file false fraud claims with the banks. They were advised that they should contact customer service departments and report that they had lost their debit cards and that their online banking was hacked. So that way, you know, any charges that were done on their cards would be filed as chargebacks. And, you know, then the the consumer could claim to be a victim, even though they were a willing participant. One unnamed person who responded to the account solicitations was an undercover law enforcement agent. Karen Vanessa Martinez, 26, of Los Angeles, allegedly instructed the agent to meet a man in a green Toyota Prius to provide a debit card. After card issues foiled initial deposits, prosecutors say Ms. Martinez later asked why the card said that the agent had only been an account holder since 2021. According to the indictment, the conspirators often urged recruits to claim their accounts had been hacked if banks inquired about fraudulent deposits. So that way they could say, oh, I was hacked, and not take responsibility. All told, members of the alleged conspiracy deposited stolen checks into at least 24 bank accounts at Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Chase, Navy Federal Credit Union, and several other banks. In each case, the indictment says they swiftly withdrew funds through cash withdrawals, transfers, and debit purchases before the fraud could be detected. So a check would be deposited. They would then spend all the money either on online purchases. They would, you know, transfer money out. They would get as much cash out through the ATM that the bank would allow them to. A Wells Fargo investigator uncovered $68,621 in fraudulent deposits into one customer's account from April to September 2021. In another instance, the defendants deposited a $46,000 check stolen from the Los Angeles Unified School District into a Wells Fargo account. And we have no idea if those were the true amounts on the checks or if they washed those checks and put in that amount. According to the charges, Jose Luis Endeza Jr., 22, of Los Angeles, alone deposited over $200,000 in stolen checks into four Wells Fargo accounts over a 10-month span in 2022. Wow, I'm surprised that he was able to do that for so long. While the exact total is unclear, prosecutors put intended losses at over $5.5 million, which could grow as the investigation continues. The defendants face additional charges of aggravated identity theft for using the names of check payees. This case demonstrates the brazenness of fraudsters who siphon millions of dollars from hardworking Americans and proved adept at exploiting the reach and anonymity of social media, said the U.S. District Attorney working on this. We will work tirelessly to identify those who use the internet to prey upon and recruit the vulnerable into criminal schemes. So that's a crazy case and not too far-fetched, where fraudsters are posting on social media and advertising on social media for people to make a quick buck. You know, there's a lot of people that want or need, you know, extra money or need a side hustle, and they aren't thinking about it and think, okay, well, what's the harm? I deposit a check, I get a cut out of it, they get the rest. And there are a lot of people that wouldn't think twice about giving their debit card to somebody. That concerns me, but you know, I know a lot more, right? And so do you, all that are listening. And so there's a lot of things that regular people would do that we just would never dream of. You know, we would ask so many questions that the fraudsters would get sick of us, but we're not the ones that they're targeting, right? They're targeting people who just want to make a quick buck and think, well, it's got to be legitimate. They're advertising it on social media, so it must be legit. That's what a lot of people think. So, you know, providing their debit cards, allowing fraudsters to deposit fraudulent checks into their bank accounts, and then allowing them to, you know, spend the money as fast as they can on their cards, and then, oh, just claim fraud, even though you were involved in it. It's quite the scheme. And I'm sure that it's not limited to just the Los Angeles area. But I have to say, I am encouraged by more, you know, law enforcement taking up cases like this, and there being, you know, information in the case files that we can find where we can learn from this and know that there are some of them that are being caught. We know it's a small percentage, but at least some of these fraudsters are being caught, and that can at least give us some peace of mind. Sardine helps their clients reduce fraud rates, decrease false positives, and streamline risk operations with their fully integrated suite of products. You can use Sardine for customer due diligence, fraud prevention, risk scoring, investigations, transaction monitoring, and/or case management. Their suite of products include device and behavior intelligence, identity fraud detection, account takeover and/or payment fraud prevention, issuing fraud detection, KYC and KYB, and AML compliance, all in one platform. With Sardine, banking and online companies can capture deep device intelligence and behavior biometrics for every customer touchpoint and interaction on your website or app. Stop fraudsters from hiding their true identity. Prevent fake account signups. Detect synthetic and stolen IDs. Block bot attacks, click fraud, promo code abuse, fake listings, and device obfuscation. Prevent unauthorized access to customer accounts. Stop the use of stolen credentials. You can detect social engineering schemes like romance scams, fake financial advisors, and voice cloning attacks. Prevent fraudulent online payments, account funding, and transfers. Protect users from APP fraud, that's authorized push payment fraud. Block stolen payment credentials and decline transactions likely to result in ACH returns or chargebacks. You can also detect refund and/or returns abuse. Tackle first-party fraud and stop fraudsters from gaming your policies. Stop card cloning attacks. Prevent unauthorized card-not-present and card-present transactions. And ingest risk scores in real time for authorization decisions. For KYC and KYB, perform customer due diligence, global watchlist screening, and document verification all in one platform. Support flexible onboarding flows that route users down streamlined paths or step up verifications. And for AML compliance, centralize your compliance operations in one dashboard. You can configure real-time and batch transaction monitoring rules, investigate suspicious activity, streamline your SAR or UAR filings, and automate case management. I've seen a lot of fraud tools and can safely say that that's a lot of capabilities to have all in one platform. You can take advantage of all or some of these features to either supplement or replace your current fraud tools. To learn more about Sardine's suite of products or to contact them to request a personalized demo of their platform, go to www.sardine.ai. That's www.sardine.ai. Well, that's it for the stories of this week. I hope that you are having a great week fraud fighting. I've gotten to have a few conversations with a handful of Fraudology listeners over the last couple of days, and I just am so lucky to get to know so many of you. I am so grateful that you listen to the podcast, that you've made this, you know, part of your weekly routine, and I appreciate it so much and really enjoy getting to know those of you that I have and hope to get to know more as the years go on. With that, I'm going to end today's episode, but I will look forward to speaking with you and a new guest next week.